Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Back here on the Hawk and Crowder Show, Alex Dono in for Mark Hochman today. Crowder here, Solana here. So, read this great piece in the Washington Post. As Big Ten and Pac-12 cancel fall seasons, college football splinters and teeters. And the author of that great piece, man, I know I've spoken to at least once before, Adam Kilgore from the Washington Post joins us. Adam, how have you been? How are you?
We're doing good up here, man. Thank you for asking. I hope all's well down there as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, we're just trying to stay safe. And so, okay, a lot has been going on in college football. We've already seen the Big 12, the Big 10, excuse me, and the Pac-12 cancel. And as of right now, the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 are planning on moving forward. In your mind, what is the likelihood that we see more cancellations? Because I don't think people should look at this and say, hey, they're definitely, these three conferences will definitely play football. I look at it as they're just kind of, you know, waiting a little bit longer to make the decision. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you said about them waiting. And it's not, you know, the fact that they have not canceled alongside the Big Ten and the Pac-12 is not to me an automatic indication that they're going to play in the fall. You know, like with everything with this virus and the pandemic, you know, we don't know what the world's going to look like in 2 weeks, let alone a month and a half or whatever, when the games might start. You know, I do think as the issue becomes more politicized, you know, I think we've already seen it, you know, break down sort of geographically along political lines, you know, like, I think if I had to offer a prediction as far as, like, you know, what's 51% and 49%, I would say, Eileen, I think that they're going to probably try to start playing, especially in the SEC. Will that be possible if, you know, the Big 12 decides to pull out and the ACC decides to pull out? Maybe not. But it does seem like those schools, given present circumstances, have enough incentives to try to give it a go, and have enough, you know, medical backing to give it a go. Whereas other conferences couldn't have that, or, you know, were relying on different experts or had a different calculus. So it's not, you know, I definitely think you're right. I definitely don't think it's a done deal. These conferences are going to play. I do think, you know, depending on how the earth moves and the climate shifts in the next few weeks, that they could actually do it. And it'd be, you know, it's just such an incredibly strange sport that half the teams can play and half the teams can, and everyone just kind of shrugs and says, oh, okay, I guess that we're going to do it.
And Adam, just I learned so much, man, when I read your articles. I just want to give you props on that. I know Dono kissed your butt a little bit, but I'm going to do a little bit more. Because, bro, the last two that we're going to speak about today, man, it cleared up so much for me. And I want to ask you this, though. Twice in your article, you said that the lack of central authority with college football. You said it twice in, I think, the first three paragraphs, and it just jumped out to me where, isn't that supposed to be the damn NCAA, Adam? Like, that's supposed to be their job, correct?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, no one's in charge, because in football, the conferences have just, you know, completely, you know, like about a decade ago, just had this sort of coup that everyone, maybe coup is too strong of a word, but had, you know, just basically wrested control of the sport and the championship, you know, the way they crowned a champion, and everyone just kind of went with it, and that's what it is. So there's nobody, you know, there's literally nobody in charge of college football. You know, the five conference commissioners usually meet and agree and set the tone for the whole sport at the D1 level. But if they don't, then you have what happens like in realignment, where that was just complete chaos, every school and every conference for themselves. And you have what we have now, which is every school, in some cases, every school, because, you know, Nebraska was like openly rebelling against the Big Ten's decision yesterday. And you have every conference for themselves and everyone, you know, I guess there is some validity to the fact that, like, geographically the virus is affecting the country in different places in different ways. So maybe the schools and conferences should make separate decisions. But I don't know. I mean, I don't see how that's healthy or sensible or logical, you know, to have half the sport moving in one direction and the other half moving in the other.
Yeah, and they're moving in different directions. And I wanted to ask you that, too. Do you think this, the clarity that this pandemic, none of us are ready for it, Adam, but the clarity that this pandemic gave us about what's going on with college sports, is this going to change college sports forever? Not just football, college sports.
That's a great question, man. I mean, I think definitely. I think in a lot of different ways. You know, I think it will either – I'm actually very interested, you know, to talking about the lack of central authority in college football. You know, that kind of like balkanization of the sport, I'll be curious to see if that becomes further entrenched and actually exacerbates, where there's like, you know, the SEC and the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are become even further sort of these separate kingdoms that run the sport in their own areas of the country, or if what's happened in the past few days gets the people who are in charge in a room together or in a Zoom call together, and they say, like, this is ridiculous. We need like a commissioner or a czar or someone to run things here. I think that's going to change. I don't know if it'll be in one direction or the other, but that's going to change. And two, a little bit separate from, well, not totally separate, because we've seen the way that players have organized in the past week or so, totally unprecedented. And I think players like never before are able to organize more easily because of social media, Zoom calls, you know, cell phones, technology, et cetera, et cetera. I think they're realizing it's not that difficult to get organized and how powerful that organization can be and what they can demand and what leagues will do. Before the pandemic hit likeness and imaging and all that, like, it was headed in the direction where players were going to see some more compensation. I think that is accelerated and, you know, very, very soon. I don't think it'll be like in 2021. Maybe it will. But very, very soon, players are going to make money off their image likeness. Players are going to get paid to play college football, maybe by schools, maybe by other, you know, some other kind of third party. Players are going to have some kind of union or something that resembles a player's union. I think that's all going to happen very fast, because I think the pandemic has exposed for the players the power that they do have.
And on that note, here's we're joined by Adam Kilgore from the Washington Post. There certainly are, you know, some players in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 who are very disappointed that their season was canceled. And this tweet from Trevon Sidney has a lot of people talking today. He said, quote, "I just don't get how playing football isn't safe, but attending classes is. If season is canceled because they're looking out for our health, how is attending classes not worse? I'm not safe to be around the same people who are tested constantly, but I'm safe around many different peers." Does he have a point there, Adam? What do you make of that tweet?
Yeah, I think that's a factor. I think the response, and I'm not saying this is my personal opinion, but I think the response to that would be from, you know, people who decide the game can't be played is, you know, when you're in class, you know, you're not like, you know, physically hitting someone and, you know, getting close to them with a face mask and breathing on them and stuff like that. But no, I mean, it's like, you know, the whole idea of college right now, separating out college sports, the whole idea of college right now is a complete minefield. So for sure. I mean, I can imagine given like the money at stake and the sophistication of college football programs, I would imagine that, you know, like a college football player has been going to practice for the summertime and is being tested and, you know, going through protocols, I would imagine them being like probably freaked out to go to a class where there's going to be none of that or way less of that. And I think that, you know, in a roundabout way, that might be an argument for why you don't play football, because then you can divert the resources that you're pouring in to protecting strictly football players and making football practice safer, to try to making, you know, using that money to put in protocols to make the campus safer. But gosh, I don't even know how you start, given what a sort of open air, open environment a college campus is. So, yeah, I mean, the questions are ripple in every direction. I mean, you know, and among all the schools, like, I'm sure some, you know, some schools aren't even going to have students on campus. So, you know, and if you don't do that, how do you justify having football players? So, yeah, it's a mess. It's like a total, you know, knot to unravel. And there's like 120 different knots making one giant knot. I think I've lost the train of thought on that metaphor there, but it's just such a hard situation. And I feel incredibly sad for the players. I mean, everybody does. Like, you know, I'm as a journalist and a guy who really enjoys crashing on the couch on Saturdays, like, I'm disappointed not to watch football for sure. But, you know, gosh, imagine the people that you have to feel the worst for are the players who showed up in the summertime, made all these sacrifices. The coaches and the administrators and people in charge told them, hey, you guys have to stay in your rooms and you have to get tested and you have to be safe and wear a mask and do this. And they've done all that so well for the most part. And then it gets to be August 11th and they say, hey, thanks for doing that. Great job. But you know what? Sorry. It meant nothing. Like, that, man, that really stinks.
So something else that you wrote about a couple days prior, which is, you know, I mean, kind of frightening for anyone who is at potentially been at risk of getting this virus and may not know some of the potential long-term effects. You wrote about the some studies that have linked long-term heart issues to COVID-19. Tell me a little bit about that and how that might even affect, you know, young people who are collegiate and professional athletes.
Yeah, so what's the sort of new and evolving research that cardiologists and infectious disease experts are finding is that when you have when you get COVID-19, you have a higher chance of developing myocarditis, which is an inflammation of the heart. It's a very, very scary thing for athletes, especially because when you're working, doing vigorous exercise, that condition can worsen. And it can also lead to sudden death. It's what, like, Reggie Lewis had and Hank Gathers had something related to myocarditis when he died suddenly. So, in the mercifully very, very rare cases of athlete death, sudden athlete death, myocarditis is one of the higher causes of that. And, you know, so, and all viruses can cause myocarditis. It's basically when an infection in your body makes its way into the heart somehow. But what researchers are seeing with COVID is that compared to, like, the flu or something, you're way more likely to get myocarditis from COVID than from a flu or any other kind of virus that they've studied. Doesn't mean it's super often that you get myocarditis, but they do find a very high percentage of cardiac involvement. So it might not be full-blown myocarditis, but something close to it or something that could lead to it. Anyway, that's a long-winded conversation, you know, way of sort of trying to explain the fact that, yeah, there are not quite fully known but very scary complications that come from COVID that could have a very acute effect on athletes. Now, that doesn't necessarily... You know, there's some cardiologists who would say, like, that's all true, but it doesn't necessarily totally change, like, the calculus of playing football or not, because the point is always just not to get the virus. So if you're taking precautions that keep you from getting infected with COVID, and you don't get it, then it's not like you can catch myocarditis, you know, separately from that. So, I think there's even some experts who would say, like, this, that the point of understanding myocarditis is that you need really, really stringent and strong cardiac screening before you return to play. But that if you're in an environment, you know, like the NFL is setting up, or like a lot of college teams set up in campus, that, theoretically keeps you from getting the virus – then, you know, maybe it's like another bad thing on top of what happens if you get COVID. But if you can avoid getting COVID, then you're fine. So I don't know. I got a little rambly there, guys, but I hope that clears up a little bit.
Adam, I love for you to ramble because you're smarter than both of us. Sorry to speak for you, Don.
You're not wrong.
You guys don't know me that well.
But Adam, you've done the research. We just talked about it. Yeah, you've done the research. You've talked to a lot of educated people, a lot of people in healthcare, a lot of people on the sports side. If you had a vote, somebody called you, Adam, should there be fall sports in 2020? What would your answer be?
Man, I was really hoping you weren't going to ask me that. I'm glad no one's going to call me asking that. Gosh, I think I would probably end up, and again, it's one of those hard decisions because, like, even if you say yes, it's not like 100% black and white. Even if you say no, it's not 100% black and white, which is why it's a little dismaying that it does seem like there's, like, you know, maybe I'm spending too much time on Twitter, but it does seem like there's, like, sides, and it's like a game that you win or lose where it's like everyone's just trying to do the right thing, and it's just a lot of shades of gray. But anyway, I think I would probably come down pretty close to, honestly, what Kevin Warren said yesterday. I wasn't totally enamored of his whole press conference on Big Ten Network or his interview on Big Ten Network. I wish he would have answered some more questions and given him some more specifics. But I do think broadly what he said about we don't have enough certainty to encourage our you know, athletes to play fall sports. I think that's where I'm closest to. There's so much still we don't know about the virus. And we don't know. And you know, a couple other factors that I don't think get mentioned enough is like the effect that, and this is like totally unfair to the players, but the effect that having a football game, even without stands on a college campus, the kind of behavior that might encourage for like gatherings and things like that. You could have like these spreading events because football's happening. There's nothing to do with the actual playing of the game. I don't know. I like to say, yeah, they should try to play and see what happens. But in maybe in a month or so, that's where I would come down because, you know, look, the virus is we're in an awful place. But the past like week or so, the arrow is sort of pointed slightly in the better direction as far as cases going down. So maybe if cases go down, it'll seem safer in a month. But I think I would, if I had to make the call today, I think I would come to a pretty similar conclusion to what Kevin Warren did.
Yeah, and I'm with you, Adam. Quickly, just to give my side of it. I don't even know if you give a damn, but I played, All-American in high school, All-American at UF, tough guy, linebacker, you know, knocking people out. But to your point, if one kid gets myocarditis and affects his life with his heart enlarged, if one kid dies from an immune deficiency, like, that would get to me if I was to give the thumbs up. So the testosterone-filled linebacker mind, I'm on the side now of, no, I don't play. Let's get more information about this. So I'm with you, bro.
I'm with you. Yeah, and I mean, I would rather make a wrong decision not playing and realize that I was too cautious, I think, than make a right decision, or, you know, to make a wrong decision and play and then find out I was wrong and a lot of people's lives were affected. I think that's where I come down, even though I don't think like people who are who think they should play are like evil or reckless or something like that. Maybe some of them are, but not all of them.
Well, I know I learned a lot here. Great stuff from Adam Kilgore. You can check out his work in the Washington Post. Adam, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. Thanks, guys. Good talking with you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.